Preparation's everything.
Well,
failure to prepare is preparing to fail.
That's right out of my one of my many creeds that I use in my life.
Creed?
Mate. Yeah.
Do you write your creeds anywhere?
No.
Really?
What are some of your favourites?
You're an inspirational quote kind of guy?
I don't mind. Yeah,
I have in the man cave at home, the inside of the door is painted in blackboard paint. I've never used it for much.
So your kids doodle on it today?
No. Please, no. Don't you dare. Because the thing about blackboard paint is it looks great because it's a matte finish. And the idea is, you know, cool, you could write on or something. But blackboards don't look clean after they've been used once.
Yeah,
even if you use a wet cloth to, after a few goes, you can still see all the rubbish.
That was one thing that bothered me at school all those years.
Yeah, totally. It's funny though, because there is a quote written, or not quote, whatever you want to call it, on the back of my door.
Yeah.
And it's from Mark Burris.
Really?
Yeah.
From
years ago.
Yellow Brick Road.
Yeah.
Is he still with that company?
He may still.
He's still a squillionaire.
Cheers, Mark. But
Mark,
in about 3 hours, my Yellow Brick Road is paid out, and we're
good luck,
banks.
To you, Mark. There goes your trail.
We've switched banks, ringing up and telling them I needed a discharge form. It was like cancelling Foxtel. Can I ask why? No. Well, I've changed banks. It's done now. It's like they're trying to convince me to keep my package, and I'm like, dude, the horse is bolted.
Yeah, but no. But the package they're trying to protect is worth a lot more than a Foxtel account.
I know.
They're
trying
to protect the home loan.
But as I said to him, I said, mate, these questions would have been great 6 months ago if you'd have rung me.
We're done.
But I've already been approved and signed the paperwork for another bank.
It's like breaking up with the girlfriend, isn't it? So I say, sorry, look, we've got to talk. It's over.
Yeah, but
we've got to move on.
I said, mate, I was very polite. Yeah. You might be surprised. But I said, mate, I appreciate that you've got a job to do and a script to read. But if you could ask me only the questions that are required for the submission of the dispersal form,
let's
move that's
this
all
along.
I want.
Yep. Move it along. Okay.
Anyway.
How did he respond to that?
He went,
was he okay?
He said, I understand. No
all
problems.
Right. Okay.
And
okay.
I felt like all the questions from then on were relevant to the dispersal.
So that's what they do, they read off. They've got a script and they've got to try to sort of convince you to stay. And
yeah, exactly.
So, I can remember someone telling me lies to stay with Foxtel.
Oh, really?
Foxtel Now, yeah. Told me lies.
Wow.
About the league coverage. So I know Foxtel Now, they've got ads in the broadcast.
Yeah.
And
there just isn't, mate.
BS,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I'm talking maybe, Jolly would remind me, but it's got to be five.
So what's the saying? You're going
to
tell us what he said?
I'll get to it. It's many years ago, so it's probably 5 years ago. Burris was doing this. I think he still does a podcast, but it got too formal. It was a great podcast early on because it was just him chatting to people. It was pretty cool. It was very relaxed. Where he went on, it just got too serious and produced.
Okay.
Anyway, he would take emails from people, and someone, I actually think it is someone I know, asked about changing careers and stuff, and how hard it would be, and all that kind of stuff. And I remember he said this thing, and this is what I wrote on the wall. He said, "Look, I don't know you. I can't help you with your particular circumstance. But all I can tell you is that the best advice is prosecute with energy the knowledge you have."
Yeah.
And I went, you know what? And this was...
Do what you know.
It was... it would be 5 years ago because it was pretty much when I left SBS.
Yeah.
So I kind of needed that. I needed that push, you know. Prosecute with energy the knowledge you have. And I'm like, that's what I do. I know
good
stuff about this. That's what I'm going to keep doing. It's not like I look at it every day and go, wow, but I notice it regularly,
That's nice. That's nice. I like to think of one. One of my favourites is about how when you those times where you need to really dig in and produce under pressure.
Yeah.
And the my favourite saying is it takes pressure to make a diamond.
Yeah.
So under a diamond can only be made under tremendous pressure. And that's kind of you've got to dig deep.
Tommy and Josh on the Daily Talk Show in Melbourne, I listen a lot, and that comes up a bit, pressure makes diamonds. And Tommy says, as soon as Josh says pressure makes diamonds, Tommy says, pressure will also crush you and kill you. So there is
there's
always...
That's the downside, that's right. Well,
you've got to be wary of those issues, right?
Of course.
There is, I will, just before we get into the show, because this is Two Blokes Talking Tech, where we actually normally talk tech, but we do gibber for a bit. Thank you for listening. There's one other inspirational quote in our house. It's on a small little board. It says, "No soup for you."
right.
That's it. That's what's in our house. So good times. Anyway, we're not here to talk inspirational quotes, though. I'm sure people do turn to us for inspiration.
I hope so.
At all times.
I do hope so.
We are here to do this.
Welcome to Two Blokes Talking Tech.
Not a bad price.
With Trevor Long from EFTM.com.
Really handy device.
And Stephen Fennec from techguide.com.au.
Thanks to the good people at Netgear and Arlo, and we'll tell you about those great companies and the products they have in the minutes ahead as we progress through episode, Stephen, 480.
480.
Of Two Blokes Talking Tech. Just 20 weeks away from hitting 500.
20 weeks. That'll be this year then, won't it?
I feel like we're... Yeah.
So it'll be that in 2020.
That's right.
What week are we up to now? Week, what,
I don't
10?
Count weeks.
Week 10 or 12 or something?
Well, we're in April, mate. So January, February, March, we'd be 12 or 13
happy
weeks
birthday
in.
Too, by the way. April Fool's Day. No, I'm just joking. I know your birthday's in December.
I've got some pretty strong feelings about April Fool's right now.
Did you see some of the releases that there were? Did you get any of those where the products, some great ones this year?
Okay, here's my problem.
Did you have any?
I don't remember seeing any because I haven't really looked at doing
any. I remember a few. I'm going to mention some.
But here's my problem. At least two things came out before April Fool's Day. So the first
one came
out
the day before.
The first one was Volkswagen doing Volkswagen, and they accidentally published the press release, but the company denied that it was an April Fool's.
What?
Yeah. And then, so it's like, you don't tell CNN that it's not an April Fool's when it is, because then they had to admit that it was. But yesterday, I got a text from someone saying, mate, can you find out if this is real or an April Fool's? And it was a trampoline.
Oh, that's
Have
the
you
one.
Seen it?
Yeah, the one, the anti-gravity one.
Now, you
could tell that was a bloody April Fool's Day. Come on.
But here's the thing. They did a good video.
They had a video.
They had a whole website.
Yeah,
it was all there.
Pre-orders.
Right? But it was put on Facebook 2 days. So on the 30th of March, it was put on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's not how April Fool's works.
It should be the first right
so
on
I
the day.
So I rang the company because I needed to check, right? I'm like, I'm not even...
Yeah, you didn't know that was an April Fool's
joke? It was clearly... But it could have just been some dimwit entrepreneur who thought that he could do it, right? And the fact is, it's not April Fool's, right? So you've got to check these things before April 1.
Yeah.
So I rang in that long queue in the customer service support, and then I said...
Oh, so you're on hold.
Yeah. and then they go, is this about the Vully Air? And I went, yes. She goes, you need to email marketing. So I emailed them, and I emailed, and then, my phone rang. I was picking the kids up from school. My phone rang. It was Max Markson, and I've got his number. And I just went, rightio. I answered the phone. I said, Max... If you're behind this, you're a goose.
It was from him. I got an email from him about it.
I didn't get an announcement about it.
I got it from him. Yeah,
someone,
Max Markson.
Someone told me about it.
Yeah.
I've blocked
Shout
him,
out
to
honest. Max, by the way.
No, I've blocked him. there's not a single release he's sent that I need. So it's just not required for me. But my point is, April Fool's, you meant to announce them today on April 1st.
Yeah, I agree.
Don't
I
you
agree.
Reckon?
Yeah, I agree.
If you're going to announce a trampoline, it's a cool thing to announce this morning. It's fun. You announce it outside of that, it's confusing.
The other one I liked was the Kobo Papier cologne spray. So, the Kobo make the digital readers, and they had a spray to spray on your reader to give it the smell of paper, of a book, new book smell.
Okay.
That was pretty clever, I think.
Yep.
Did you like that one?
It's all right.
Was it with any others that you saw? The other one was the Contiki Tours partnering with Branson to have 18 to 35 discounted space travel. That was the other one that I saw. That was pretty cool. Any others that you saw?
No, mate, I haven't paid any attention.
They're not bad ones.
Pretty much, yeah. No, that's a hard no from me.
But there was a few years ago, I'm trying to think, Google normally has an April Fool's. I remember a couple of years ago, Google had one where they're going to use your plumbing in your house to improve your Wi-Fi. It was like toilet Wi-Fi or something they called it. It was pretty silly. It stood out as an April Fool's joke. But
so just because it's relevant, I've just got a text from Jackson.
Yeah.
And it says, bring it up with Stephen when you next see him.
What's that?
Have you seen this from Fox League?
Breaking.
Read it out.
Adam Reynolds joins come on. on season long loan.
Adam Reynolds joins the Roosters on season long loan.
That's a solid April Fool's joke.
That's pretty
good. Because their halfbacks are injured now. Kiri's injured. I don't know.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. I wouldn't have believed that for a second. Wow.
Anyway.
That's not an April Fool's joke. That's an offence. That's offensive. They even suggest that. Anyway, we'll talk about our South Sydney Rabbitohs and Roosters rivalry later.
Anyway, let's talk tech. And the biggest story of the week from Apple, although there's a couple of stories we'll get into, is Worldwide Developers Conference, and the announcement that it will go ahead once again, but it will once again be virtual. Now,
two in a row.
I don't think that's breaking news. I think that's obvious, but two in a row, I think, is a...
Yeah.
And I don't know. We would have to go back and listen, but there's no way we expected that Dub would be 2 years in a row.
No, virtual. Not at all.
No one.
A year ago, we were hopeful that we'd be back there, eh? Next year. So this year.
Yeah.
So in 2020, we thought, June 2021, we'll be right. We'll be there.
So I think the progression was in March 2020, we thought, you certainly thought by July we'd be travelling. I thought maybe later in the year.
And then you were more realistic.
But as it progressed, I stretched out further, as did you.
But early on, I'm thinking, mate, in 3 months we're on planes. But you were saying, mate, before the end, we won't fly until the end of the year. And you're right.
Mm.
One of the rare things you've got right on the show, I'll admit. But before we talk more WWDC, are you thinking, I'm holding out hope that our first international tech trip will be CES 22. Do you reckon that's a realistic expectation? January 2022, back in the US?
I don't know.
That's what's that, 8 months away?
It's 8 months away. Oh, look, I do. That is my thought. That is my current thought and plan.
Mm.
I don't believe it will be a normal CES.
Oh, it'll be so different. Yeah.
I don't imagine that I'll do the kind of coverage I normally do. I don't think the team will be like it is. I think it'll be vaccine related and all those different things.
You have to have a vaccine in your passport.
And we are starting to learn, so we now know broadly, and I'm not a doctor, so don't quote me, but we now know broadly that the Pfizer vaccine is actually very, very good at stopping infection, not just the effects, but infection. So that's a huge deal.
So if you have the Pfizer vaccine, you become... Even if you've got it, you're less
essentially
infectious.
Essentially immune.
You're less infectious.
Yeah, it's not even...
Oh, so you can't catch it again.
Yeah, you can't catch it.
Right.
So
the AstraZeneca is more...
Well, the same data doesn't exist yet for AstraZeneca, that's all. So there's a lot to do yet on that.
It's obviously Apple couldn't pull that together. It's 2 months away, June. Like, mate, we're talking... It's too soon.
They would have written off by now the iPhone as well.
Oh, you reckon the iPhone event?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Because there's too much planning goes. Months of planning
too
goes.
Much,
away,
there's too much changes. And you can see, like, just by Australia's, reaction to a couple of cases in Brisbane, you can see how volatile it is.
Yeah.
And there's no way that they want to be involved in that
risk
and that kind of
bad
stuff.
Bad luck if you go to Byron Bay this Easter weekend, eh? That's shut down and the Blues Festival's off as well.
It's just crazy. So, I at this point still hold out hope that we'll get to CES.
Yeah.
But it won't be the same event, and
I'll be vastly reduced, wouldn't it? Be just
I just can't imagine how they'll have the same number of everything. Like the whole thing has to be smaller, and
it'll be paired
that
back.
Then asks the question: is it viable? In that sense,
of course. Because to hold an event that large, you need a lot of people there, of course. Yeah.
And for me, the viability of that event requires the physical presence, and that was my feedback to them on the survey was that the virtual event was horrible. I had to be honest, it just didn't work.
Yeah, well, the companies had their individual press conferences and they were streamed and that was okay, and they got the point across. They achieved their objectives. That's right. But I think those little companies that you find in the halls, that they're the ones who missed out. Like Unveiled was a missed opportunity. That I think that's one of the highlights of the show for me is Unveiled, which is amazing. But
I still think it's possible to do it, but that's a whole other world. But anyway, Dub being virtual, there's a couple of things about this, mate. Honestly, what's wrong with Dub as a virtual event? See, where it's wrong to think about us, because we're just a side event for Dub. We're just there to report it. So I think it's better because I get to see the briefing in my own time and watch the event, the keynote. We have the meetings that we would normally have on the ground, we have virtually, and they're easier to structure because you don't have to go from place to place. So I find it better. And for developers, everyone can go. Yeah. It's open to all developers, not 5,000 of them.
Yeah.
The only thing, I worked this out during the week, the only thing developers miss out on is
the jacket.
Yeah,
I thought the same thing. The outerwear.
That's a big deal for devs.
Absolutely.
They want to have that. And the networking.
And the pins. They used to have the pins too, and that.
A bunch of
the networking.
Developer nerds.
Yeah. I think that's
insular,
the highlight of their year.
They're introverts most likely.
Yes.
And so for them to
they don't get out much.
To be in a group of like-minded people is their most social experience. So,
but you know what? There's nothing beats... I had this conversation with Peter Overton on my Tech God podcast, and I said to him, all these interviews, you've had some great interviews over Zoom and all this stuff you do now. I said, are you ever going to go back to being in person with people? He goes, look, nothing beats human interaction. And he mentioned, what's his name, Joyce, the boss of Qantas, said the same thing. He goes, Peter, people like interacting with other people in person. It's our nature. So I think for WWDC with the developers, that is, I reckon that would be the highlight of their calendar because they're mixing with these people who are from other countries,
I guess,
similar interests.
My point is the overhead cost of having the online version is minuscule compared to the cost of the event. So I would imagine that Dub 2022 is an in-person event for 3,000 or 2,000 because it's socially distanced or whatever with a full virtual component.
Yeah, for sure.
Why not?
I think there was already a virtual component anyway. You could do some stuff online. Not to the scale it is now.
It wasn't to the scale it is now, and that's why it's so great.
I agree. They'll maintain that for sure. You don't want to give people less. But it does, though, we're not talking hardware here. We're talking software. There are some hardware announcements. It wasn't last year, but we are talking a software-related event. So it really, being online is actually... It plays into that it's all about software,
which goes back to our point about phones we've talked about in previous weeks, where the phone and iPad and other events will always go back to being physical in some way, shape, or form, because that ability to get hands on is a big part of the hype,
absolutely,
big part of the vibe of it.
And that's good content for us when we're there. Good content for us to create because we're on the ground. It stands us out from other people who are not there.
Yeah.
We've got that advantage. It gives us a lot of credibility.
So I think it's good. I think it's expected.
So
it's
up at 4 a.m., was it? 3 a.m., whatever time it is.
Some ungodly bloody hour, you know. But
yeah,
that's all right. I don't mind that.
But that's a good thing of being there. You don't have to get up in the middle of the night. You're there. You're in the zone.
Mate, I would get up in the morning and have the virtual keynote and then have the virtual briefings.
Yeah.
Every day of the week before going.
Really?
Yeah,
I guess so.
Don't have to queue up for the event.
You don't have to fly there either.
I can report.
You don't miss that though? I really miss that part of it, of getting on a plane and going to another country. I miss that.
Don't get me wrong.
I miss being in America.
Yeah, I miss travel.
I miss shopping in America.
I don't.
Yeah. Because my wife normally expects some things from Sephora and they can't buy in Australia.
So no issue there.
Even me, I buy my running shoes when I'm over there. I've had to pay full freight in Australia for my runners.
Poor dear.
Well, we'll be talking about a pair that we did get gratis, but
I don't know. I think of all the Apple events, Dub's the one that sits at the lowest for me in terms of priority to be there.
Okay.
Because. Yeah, it doesn't.
Do you
have
do a cross normally
hype.
From that? Yeah. Do you do a cross? Yeah, I've done a crosses from there too.
It doesn't normally have the same hype as an Apple event in terms of the amount of coverage it can get.
Yeah,
And you know the way, and again, it's inside baseball for us. But the ability to report on a keynote is so much easier at your desktop computer than sitting in a theater with no arm room and
trying to
struggling
get your
story internet.
Written.
Yeah, you know, getting a screenshot from a keynote is much easier than taking a photo, downloading the photo onto your computer, and uploading the photo to your website. That's why it's a strange quandary.
Yeah, I understand. And imagine the money there. All these companies must be saving a ton of money.
Yeah.
Or of not having Samsung haven't had their last major event, two events, have been virtual. Apple's last year has been virtual. So they'd have a bit of money left over, I think.
You would assume.
They'd go to employee bonuses and stuff, or what happens there? Because that's the question. I think we've asked this before. What happens in a year and 2 years? Do the companies realise that, you know what, we can get this, just the same reception, the same coverage, the same feeling of having a virtual event than going to the trouble and spending money?
I'd love to know what the audience thinks here, because when I talk to Stig about this, and again, he's, favoured by the fact that he loves travelling as well.
Yeah.
He doesn't think they get the same coverage out of these virtual things.
I reckon there's a bit more prestige at an event. Yeah, but you're at your... You know,
for the average Joe listening who's interested in smartphones, computers, whatever, are you seeing less coverage because the events are virtual? I don't think so.
No, you're not. And I think, but it's only the companies like, let's talk Apple and Samsung here. They're the two main companies that are getting, that can make the news.
They can make the
whether
news
it's virtually
virtual,
or
in person.
Whether it's virtual or in person, they're making the evening news on their announcements. iPhone announcements, Samsung have been on the news, you know, so they're flying, but these other companies that are trying to get that same sort of attention, are they? What's the story there? It's going to be really interesting how this pans out in the year or two ahead. Whether we look, I don't expect travel to return to its normal way, like the amount of trips ever. We do. I don't, well, tech trips,
yep.
I don't expect that to return to the full level, yep, that it was.
I agree.
Like at its height, we were traveling like 14 times a year. Mm. You as well, probably more.
Yeah. My height was 2019, I think it was, or 2018. Yeah. I did like 72 flights.
Wow. And that's like domestic and international, yeah, flights. Yeah. Well, I never kept count, but it was... there'd be trips offered. I'd knock back more trips than I went on, as would you.
Yeah.
Now, I think what I like though is that events are starting to come back. I've been to a few events recently. I know you don't like people, mate, so you don't go to these events. But it's good that we're coming out again. We're getting back together and in person. So whether travel follows, I don't know. But in this case, WWDC, we've got to watch it from the sidelines, from our computers.
Early home. June, as always.
June 8 to 12. Yeah. So there'll be the traditional keynote. So Tim Cook will introduce it. Tim Cook will get up and introduce it from Apple Park, probably.
But remember, too, the keynote now is not a keynote. It's a video presentation. And frankly, it was remarkably more slick and thorough.
Exactly.
Even though Apple's keynotes were the most slick of all, ever.
Of course, yeah.
But this video production means that it's just so perfectly condensed.
Yeah. They're already working on it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
What do you expect from iOS 15? Incremental?
It has
to be incremental.
I can't see there being a real design shift. I don't think they're going to change the look of it much.
Mm. 14 was a big leap with widgets and stuff.
Yeah, that was. I reckon that, it'll be more of a smaller update. I'm expecting there'll be more changes on the Mac side, on the Mac OS. To be more iOS-like. I reckon that they're creeping ever closer together.
But I think likewise, I think the iPad OS will move towards more Mac OS. I think there'll be this.
Yeah, but they're all meeting in the middle, I reckon. Yeah. There's a convergence there that it's becoming, like, that's what I noticed about Big Sur. It's more iOS-like than any other system before. It's becoming, they're sharing features and becoming, and that makes sense because you want there's some, that kind of synergy to be between these products. So not too much difference. Watch OS, I don't know. What they must have these amazing meetings thinking, what can we do now? What can we do that's better?
What are they missing?
Watch OS, I think, still hasn't got the third-party watch faces.
That's still a massive thing for me.
I can't believe they're not clicking the ticket there.
I've said this 100 million times since day one. Make money on watch faces.
I would pay a ton of money. I would pay, too, for a good Apple watch faces.
Yeah.
So what are they waiting for? Maybe that'll be a third-party introduction to watchOS.
It's the only logical thing they can have. Wear OS already has.
They've got an app store for watch. They're going to have a watch face store for watch.
Makes perfect sense.
Why not?
I don't know what else you can do. We play with a lot of smartwatches.
Yeah.
Apple's not lacking anything.
I think there'll be more, health features.
They'll announce that ECG's rolled out to more countries and all those great things that have
including
happened.
Including Australia.
We're still not available yet.
That's dropping shortly, but isn't it? The next update, 7.4, I think it's going to be. That should drop within the next few weeks.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway.
You got information? You privy to these things?
Oh, you never know. But
that's Stephen's way of saying no, but I'm making it up.
No, I don't, but I'm just pretending I do. No. Well, going by what happened in other countries, the time frame, we're coming up to it. Because I remember the previous 7.3 had updates from Japan, Philippines, Thailand, and their ECG was approved a couple of weeks before that from their relative thing. So, yeah, would you? A lot of people have asked about that, actually. A lot of my readers
said,
when's ECG coming on? We'll
get the rumours will start to drop in the next few weeks about what's coming to Mac and iPad.
And what's Mac OS going to be called this time, you reckon?
I've never been out of
Mac OS San Diego. It's always a Californian thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not a big name. It's normally a...
What do they have? Yosemite and El Capitan.
I don't know why they're on Yellowstone.
Maybe there might be a stand. The series might have a copyright issue.
Mate, the national park might have a copyright issue.
Maybe. Kevin Costner might say, no.
Yeah.
You're not doing that.
Mate, imagine if Tim Cook was a massive fan of Yellowstone, show, and he said, we've got to do it.
And he said, we'll do it under one condition, that I've got to make a cameo in the show. So Tim Cook's like an extra or something in the show in the background. Would that be distracting?
Tim Cook on a rodeo horse.
in a bar fight next to Kevin Costner.
With, what's his name? Jimmy, the kid that gets thrown around. Jimmy's still in a car, so Tim Cook comes up. Yeah. What do you reckon?
Me become a wrangler, become a cowboy.
Here we go. What are the girls called? Barrel
Where is
girls.
He from? He's from Alabama. Is that sort of, is that, what do they ride horses in Alabama?
I just think we should stop.
Yeah,
because
maybe,
we're probably going to end in a point that we don't want.
Righto.
But I personally don't see Tim Cook on a bucking horse.
But so, we'll it started from the speculation about what the name's going to be, and it's always a Californian landmark.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that's going to be.
I'd never heard of any of the
How
landmarks.
How about Mac OS Alcatraz? Would that be good?
And then people will jailbreak it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Mac OS Disneyland. Mac OS Anaheim.
I think the bigger question around naming of things is the next iPhone. I think it'll be iPhone 12S because I think they'll try and skip 13. I still think 13's a bad
number
to have, yeah.
Because what do they skip? 9, eh? They skip 9. Wonder what that why that was, 9. Because they had Did they have iOS? OS? I had iOS 9, didn't they?
Yes.
And they had OS 9?
I don't know. No, mate, it's only ever been OS 10.
Yeah, for 20 years it's been OS 10.
You know, they're taking the mickey now with the number. Anyway, details of DubDub. If you are a developer, get in, sign up, get on. It's going to be a great virtual event. It always is.
Well, continuing on the Apple front there, they did announce something else this week about a repair program. And this is... what they call it was out-of-warranty repairs. And by that, it's like smashed screens, and which is the most common repair on iPhone. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
The most common repair is a screen.
Yep.
And they announced the Independent Repair Provider Program. And this has already expanded to other countries, but there are more than 200 countries, including Australia, are going to be included in this program, which gives these repairers, so those little kiosks you see in shopping centres, larger repair stores, gives them the opportunity to receive free training, to receive the diagnostic tools, genuine parts, and all of the skills to provide a genuine Apple part repair replacement for customers. And this is obviously Apple's very protective of its product. They want customers to get the best experience from the product.
Yep.
And this is a way to give the repairers, so it gives customers a chance to get genuine replacements and repairs in more places rather than having to go just to an Apple store.
And it's a established program. So basically, as a repair business, you apply, and there's a 6 to 8 week period of essentially legal documents back and forth, approvals you
training.
Need to go through.
Yeah.
And then there's training on top of that of the staff. So the business itself needs to be approved and sign off on all the paperwork and contracts. And then the individual repairers need to be trained, and that's an online process. It's about six hours of general training, and then 8 hours per product. So it's a decent bit of it's a decent whack of training, just to repair one model. But it's all free. That's fine. And then the company gets access to official parts. It reminds me of the ads Repco would have about oil filters for your Toyota Corolla, and then Toyota would have ads for Toyota genuine parts. It's like, an oil filter is an oil filter, right?
Yeah.
But the idea is that these repairers are not hooked into the Apple thing exclusively. They can still offer third-party batteries and screens and everything else, but they have to let people know that they're getting a third-party screen or an Apple screen or a third-party battery, whatever it is. And they have to, obviously then there'll be a very clear differentiation in price. Mm. At a first glance, it looks great. It looks like a really good program that allows people to do the right thing. But, mate, on the EFTM podcast this week, I spoke to two repairers. Ben Nash, who runs a company called iFix Electronics on Central Coast. I've spoken to him for years about different things on the radio and stuff. He's very good. And he, there's no way he's doing it. Because he's like, dude, it's too expensive. The amount of time, the amount of cost, just people will never pay the extra. Because the cost of an Apple genuine part plus my labor just prices it right out of the market. People will never pay for it.
Okay. And then, so that's the other issue. The issue is the third party parts, and I was under the impression up until this week that if you use the third party screen or another part, then that voids the warranty. But that's not the case.
No.
The case is if the phone is damaged within the process of repairing it with a third party screen or part, that voids the warranty. Or yeah. if the screen, if the device doesn't perform to the level of as normal because of the third party part, that's voided your warranty as well.
Yes.
So that's still, so the, your mate who offers third party because of it's a better cost to the customer, cheaper cost to the customer and to him.
Mm.
So he's saying that the genuine Apple part cost is much higher.
Much higher.
And his labour is also, it takes longer?
No, he's just saying the cost is much higher and there's just no value in it for them. Plus,
right.
the bigger issue is actually the devil in the detail. Now, you know, Apple will tell you that obviously they're also cracking down on, you know, counterfeit parts.
Yeah.
So parts that have an Apple logo on them but aren't Apple, that's yeah. counterfeit, right? So okay. third-party parts and counterfeit parts are two different things.
Yeah.
But I would get a sense from different repairers I've spoken to that maybe they don't know or don't deal directly with counterfeit parts, but they can't sign a contract that says they're not, and then yeah. that puts them in a really big legal hole if they do get caught with them. And yeah. why would you want to put the threat of, you know, bringing your business down ahead of just having genuine parts on offer? So
yeah.
I think what you'll get is this. I don't want to call them backyard, but back there's a lot of people who do this. Just, you know, that's their job. They're a one man band. They yeah. don't even have a shop front. Those people won't sign up. The kiosk, the big kiosk in the middle of Westfield, they might, yeah. but those side kiosks and stuff, there's no way they're signing up because yeah. that's just not the model. And but, you know, yeah. for iPhone 7 or 8, you know, no one gives a rat's. They just want it fixed. Doesn't matter yeah. that it's a third party or a buddy yeah. counterfeit part, frankly.
Yeah.
Those people are never going back to Apple with that phone because it's broken. It broke yeah. and they know it broke.
Mm. But the, yeah, and that's the thing to point out. There's the, they do call them out of warranty repairs, which is basically your fault it broke.
Yes.
That's, you've got to fix it. So that's, in and I'm going to touch wood now. In all the years I've had an iPhone, I've never broken a screen.
Yeah.
Have you ever broken a screen?
No.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like it's broken because the screen protectors always break on mine.
Can't say the same for my kids.
My screen protector looks smashed in different places, but it's just the screen protector.
You don't have a cover on the phone, mate.
No.
You just have you dropped it?
No.
Right. You just like having the bare naked phone.
Bare naked phone, yeah.
Yeah.
I like it, that one.
I got that cover there, mate.
Oh, good on you, mate. Bit of an SF.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm a bit nervous not having a cover on my phone I want to because if you're more likely, let's face it, to crack your screen without a cover on it.
Oh, for sure.
So having a cover on it at least gives you
I'll tell you the protection. Biggest problem I've got is I'm testing a lot of MagSafe stuff right now, and unless you've got the Apple cover with MagSafe,
yeah, I know. So that I was going to ask about that.
You're completely screwed
because you got the Belkin stuff. You're doing it as well. I've got them as well, and any other non-MagSafe cover doesn't work.
No, that's right.
So you've got to have an Apple's cover for MagSafe to work.
No. At this point, yes.
Or no cover.
Yes. So at this point, the only MagSafe covers are Apple.
Yes.
But there will... This is new still, right? It's only a few months old. There will be covers that come out with... I bet you OtterBox have a MagSafe cover in the future. Mm-hmm. They've just got to build those magnets into it, because what happens is it's kind of a set of pass-through magnets that allow it to clip on and pass the charge through. Because wireless charging still works through third-party cases.
Yeah.
But MagSafe is both wireless charging and the clip-on. So
yes.
I'm not
so
saying
at the moment,
Apple,
third-party cases just gives you the charge, not the magnet.
Correct.
Doesn't stick with the magnet.
Yeah. So, right. you know, I have no doubt there will be MagSafe-compatible, like logo-authorized cases that come.
But they're not available yet. But they've got to be licensed through Apple as well.
They've got to get that for iPhone.
It's another Apple pointing you into their way of doing things for these cover manufacturers.
But that's cover manufacturers going, do I want the business of people who are buying brand new phones and really cool Belkin, you know, or other third-party stands and stuff? Yes, they do. So they'll implement it.
Yeah.
That won't be a problem.
Yeah, okay.
They've done it before. They'll do it again.
So, on the repair front, I think. How do you think? Your gut
my
feeling
summary
is.
My summary is
not everyone's going to accept
it. It's a very smart move by Apple, and it's probably well overdue.
Yeah.
But I don't think that bulk of places you go to get your phone repaired are going to be offering Apple genuine parts.
Okay. But the rare times I've had to, like, normally it's my kids have broken a screen, and before they had jobs and they'd broken a screen, I'd always say to them, okay, it's going to cost $100 to fix the screen. I'll pay half, you pay the other half.
Hmm.
And that way they'd know they've got to be careful of the screen next time.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would always be a case of, look, the person would offer, look, the genuine Apple screen is going to be $190. The third party will be $110. And for them, it was the cheaper option was the one they always went for.
Yeah.
But I don't think everyone would want that. If it for me personally, I'd prefer to have an Apple genuine screen on my phone.
I've just remembered something. We were talking about that high cost and the third-party repairer with genuine parts. I think what Ben said to me was, because of the price of the iPhone genuine part and his labor on top,
yeah,
it worked out it was going to end up being the same price as going to Apple and doing it. So people would just go to Apple.
Yeah.
And so the point of a business outside of Apple is to be price competitive, right?
Well, yeah, I think it's more convenience too. Like if you don't, your nearest Apple store is in the city and you got your local shopping center can do it, that'd be attractive, wouldn't it?
Well, I think so. But
if I could get my screen repaired for $200 at East Gardens, or $200 in the city, guess where I'm going? I'm going to East Gardens to do it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that would go, I think I'd prefer to do it at Apple.
Why? But if they're trained repairers, isn't that the whole point for them to be trained up?
Well, that's what Apple needs to do, is if they're going to spend money on the marketing around that, you know, Apple authorized kind of thing, then maybe it'll work beautifully.
So there has to be some sort of signage, isn't it? They've got to say Apple approved repairer. Authorized.
Yeah, we need to know how to pick those things and all that kind of stuff.
So
bottom line, it's a great deal. I just don't think it's as big a deal as Apple think it is.
Right. Okay.
That's my point.
Okay. Well, you know what? This is something that our listeners and readers deal with every day. Screens, they're on their devices, especially iPhone screens.
Yeah.
Would that be 90% of these businesses, the kiosks that in these stores? Would that screens, be 90% screens?
Yeah.
They might put screen protectors on some as well.
Yeah.
Sell cases, but the screens would be the bread and butter.
Bread and butter.
Yeah.
Two Blokes Talking Tech. Let us know what you think. Hit us up on Twitter at Trevor Long, at Stephen Fenwick. And we do it all thanks to the good people at Netgear, netgear.com.au for all your networking solutions. If you've got a lot of devices in your home, you've got, you've got 30 or 40 smart home devices, computers, Xboxes, TVs, you're starting to get to the point where a Wi-Fi network will get saturated by the traffic, and that's when you need to turn to Wi-Fi 6. Because it's a more efficient Wi-Fi network, it's a more efficient Wi-Fi protocol, and so many devices are now Wi-Fi 6 compatible, plus your existing devices will then work around that and those newer devices. So Wi-Fi 6 products from Netgear are amazing, and you'll find a range of them from the Nighthawk range right through to the Orbi range. So the Orbi Wi-Fi 6 is probably the ultimate solution for your home to give you mesh Wi-Fi, which is Wi-Fi all throughout your home at the best speed possible from your modem, without having to replace your modem from your ISP. You just plug into the Orbi system, into your existing modem, and a whole new Wi-Fi network is created, ready with the best range, speed, and Wi-Fi 6 connectivity. You can find out all the details at netgear.com.au. So I need to put my glasses on now because I need to read something. I'm still not used to it. I just don't.
The glasses?
Yeah. I just don't carry them around enough.
I've got the goggles with me all the time.
I just don't carry them around enough. I just don't. So Facebook last night announced a couple of interesting things. The first of which was some changes to their front end. So the way we interact with Facebook, very simple, subtle stuff, but nonetheless important to know. So I'll run you through what they are. There's some changes that allow you to control what you share. So basically, people have always, individuals have always been able to say, who can comment on this, who can see this post? You know,
friends,
only
or
me,
public.
Friends,
yeah.
Public, etc.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can now show who can comment. So you can say only friends and etc. And public profiles and pages like ours, we can say public or only pages we tag. So let's say we put up the podcast and say, you know, Trevor Long and Stephen Fenwick from techguide.com.au and EFTM.com here, no one can comment except Trevor Long, Stephen Fenwick, EFTM and Tech Guide because we tagged each other, right? So you're limiting who can comment on a post.
Okay. So but, no one, apart from us, no one else can comment.
Yeah, which is a complete
waste. Well, you mean us as who administrate the pages?
Yes.
Or people who follow our pages? So just the administrators can comment, not the people who are followers.
That's right, yes. Right. Okay. So it's a way of, let's say...
Highly restrictive.
Let's say, well, it's possible on Twitter as well. You can do that now on Twitter. Only the people that are mentioned in the tweet can engage in the tweet, can comment on
is
the
that
tweet.
How long has that been going on?
Oh, a little while. Yeah. It's pretty cool, but it only applies to the person who creates the tweet, not the people who down the
thread. So you say you tweet and you include me, Netgear, Arlo, all the companies.
Only those people can comment.
So you designate that?
Yes.
So no one else can comment that is not mentioned?
That's right. Okay. So Facebook's done the same thing, which essentially means that a public profile can turn off comments. That's what they're saying here, but they're not saying it broadly.
Right.
They're just saying if you don't tag anyone, no one can comment.
So what's the point of this?
Anti-trolling.
Right.
So, you know.
So just to reduce hate speech.
Someone can put up a post without having the fear of someone trolling them through the comments.
Okay.
I don't think that's that big a deal. But there is now a control what you see function. So you can actually now go into there's a filter for the news feed that allows you to rank the news feed chronologically.
Right.
So you're basically bypassing the algorithm. So there's now three ways to look at your news feed. The standard Facebook news feed, which is all algorithmic and, you know, who knows what's going to be there.
Yep.
There's chronological, which is anything you follow and do, but in order.
And it comes in, yep.
And then there's favourites, which is your way of going, this page and these things are favourites. I want to see that stuff in this feed. So there's three feeds to choose from.
Okay.
I don't mind that. That's pretty cool. But the other one, this is what I do like. When you look at an ad on Facebook, it says, there's three dots you click and you see, why am I seeing this? And it tells you why you saw that ad. That is also now applying to Facebook suggested content. So when they suggest a piece of content to you or a page or something, it'll say why. So you can find out what they're seeing and knowing about
you. Because I often get that. I get a lot of stuff now. Anything to do with Star Wars gets in my feed. Anything to do with astrophotography gets in my feed.
Yep.
Anything to do with Souths gets in my feed, NRL. So that's pretty obvious why that's in my feed.
Yeah.
But so the choice is what would you prefer in your... Would you prefer chronological?
I think I'd prefer chronological, but I think I would realize how much of a task that is. I just don't think we realize how many people we follow.
Yeah.
So the other thing that happened last night was Nick Clegg, the Vice President of Global Affairs on Facebook, published, I don't know where he published it, to be honest, it was just sent to me, but it's probably on their Facebook page, an essay. A 5,000-word essay.
Wow, that's a long essay.
I just picked two bits of it and that I put at EFTM.com, but it's like a detailed hit at all the drama that Facebook's had. And I'll read you the start of it here, that The Atlantic described Facebook as a doomsday machine. This is what he's saying, a dude from Facebook. The Atlantic described Facebook as a doomsday machine. The Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma, the filmmakers imagine a digital control room where engineers press buttons and turn dials. So he goes into all the things that have come out over recent weeks about Facebook and months. And then he goes on for 5,000 words about that. And look, all I can do is tell you, the upshot that I took out of it was his words are, we can't escape technology, but we can control what we share and what we do and what we say on technology. And Facebook works hard to make it a good experience. And the example I'll give you is, and I didn't know this, but he does mention this in this essay. He mentions something about website traffic and how, I'll read this too. When pages and groups repeatedly post some of these types of content to Facebook, like clickbait or misinformation, Facebook reduces the distribution of all the posts from those pages and groups. And this is very interesting, Stephen, listen to this. Where websites generate a disproportionate amount of their traffic from Facebook relative to the rest of the internet, which is often indicative of a pattern of posting more sensational or spammy content, Facebook likewise demotes all the posts from pages run by those websites.
So clickbaity stuff.
Yes.
Really?
So you know those websites that are set up that are just image galleries you've got to click through because the image you wanted to see is never really there. I'm a sucker for them. If that's all they're doing and they're generating all this traffic through Facebook, like if 90% of their traffic to their website comes through Facebook, Facebook will just go, you're not a real website.
Really? Wow.
I find that. So that's a... See, we think of the algorithm as being this thing where it controls what we see based on the content, right? But it's based on so much more, like your traffic.
Mm.
Like, I'd never thought about that. And it's a good mechanism. Like, if I probably received 10 to 12% of my traffic through Facebook, right? If I was receiving 50%, Facebook would go, dude, what are you doing? We're going to demote you in the algorithm.
Wow. Well, that'll be good for sites like yours and mine. If these other sites are getting that sort of inflated attention, that might flow back to us.
I mean, what they're not saying this is new. They're just saying this is the way they do it, and they're trying to expose a bit more of what they do. And I think it does help kind of shape the conversation.
Mm.
In the end, you know, there's not exactly a summary here, but he does say the truth is machines have not taken over, but they are here to stay. We need to make our peace with them. A better understanding of the relationship between the user and the algorithm is in everyone's interest. Mm. People need to have confidence in the systems that are so integral to modern life. The internet needs new rules for the road that can be that can command broad public consent. And tech companies need to know the parameters within which society is comfortable for them to operate, so they will give permission and continue to innovate. That starts with openness and transparency and giving you more control.
Yeah, I think Facebook's got a lot to answer for because they've just been so influential.
Yeah.
The internet is now, Facebook is the internet.
Yeah.
And the internet is Facebook. They've got, you know, there's been things good and bad that have come out of it, like the trolling and the cyberbullying. And yep. So Facebook's
they're on the bad side,
played
right?
a role. They've played a role in that.
That's bad, not good, right?
Of course. So they've it's good to see that they're having the discussion.
Yeah, and I think
they're being frank about themselves.
Yeah, and I think if someone with more time on their hands than me read through this in greater detail, you would learn a lot more about Facebook's approach. And I think that this is more transparent than I've ever seen from Facebook, and I acknowledge that, and I think that's a great move.
This dude works for Facebook.
Yeah, he's
there. Why isn't Mark Zuckerberg saying this stuff?
Well, I don't know. Nick Clegg is their vice president of global affairs. Right. I don't know. I'd prefer Nick Clegg said it than Zuckerberg, frankly.
Okay.
I'm not a massive fan of the bloke anymore.
After what he pulled on us with the news, news feeds, mate?
That, and just generally, I don't know.
Have you seen the movie The Social Network?
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
Great movie.
Written by Aaron Sorkin.
Yes, mate, we've talked about it.
Academy Award he won for that.
Good on him.
Adapted screenplay.
I prefer his work in the newsroom.
Newsroom? West Wing, mate. West Wing's his...
Yeah, I like the newsroom.
West Wing, I tell you what, an underappreciated script of his is Steve Jobs, you know, the movie with Michael Fassbender that we saw together.
We saw it together.
Yeah. And that was brilliantly done. And he had three events... That's how it was sort of, rather than do a sort of a cradle to grave biopic of Steve Jobs, he just cherry picked these three events and the stuff going on around them. I thought that was very clever.
So if you want to read that full essay, it's at nickclegg.medium.com. Okay. Nick Clegg, one word, .medium.com. He's a former, Nick Clegg, Vice President of Global Affairs, Facebook, former Deputy Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. Did not know that.
He's got some credentials.
Oh. There you go.
Wow.
Oh, bloke bats above his
head. He knows politics.
Yeah, I think he knows what he's doing. But if that's the start of Facebook's openness, I respect it.
Well, that's good. And look, I think we need that because these platforms are so figure so prominently in our lives now that it's good that they're having a look inward, looking at themselves rather than how else they can make money and how else they can increase the numbers of people who use their platforms.
Yeah.
The people that are already there is what I reckon.
Yeah, true. And in the end, they are here to make money.
Absolutely. So of course they are. Their of job. Course.
All right. You can read more about that at EFTM.com and other places on the interwebs.
This is Two Blokes Talking Tech with Trevor Long and Stephen Fenech.
Well, the Olympics are not just around the corner.
But they're still calling them Tokyo 2020.
Yeah, well, I think
that's dumb.
Just for tradition. Yeah.
That's dumb.
Because it's got to be the same year. It's got to be every 4 years.
That's dumb.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
Mate.
I don't mind it.
Expo 2020 in Dubai.
Yeah.
Because they were marketing this thing heavily on billboards at the Formula One. Expo 2020 runs from December 21 through to October 22. Expo 2020.
That's dumb. But
no, mate, same thing. They run it on a... You really think that calling Tokyo 2021 2020 is good?
Yes.
That's dumb.
It was meant to happen in 2020.
It's like saying in 100 years we'll forget that there was a pandemic. Mate, we'll never forget this.
Well, I know we won't, but it was meant to be... The 2020 Olympics was what Tokyo won to host, and that's what they're going to call it. That's what it is. 2021, it doesn't work.
Do you reckon that's just because so many of the posters are already printed?
Probably, yes. A lot of the merch. Exactly right. That's probably part of it. But anyway.
I find it dumb.
In relation to that, ASICS have just unveiled their new high-tech shoes, the Metaspeed shoes. And we both received a pair. I know Trevor.
I put them on.
Trevor's a big runner. I went for a walk and a little jog in them yesterday.
I put them on and realised very quickly they were made for someone other than me.
Like, it was like having springs on your feet, wasn't it?
Did you know the first thing I thought?
What's that?
Jimmy looks good in these.
Jimmy.
Remember the shoes in Seinfeld?
When he does the big the leaps.
Bouncing, because they're so soft and bouncy. All I could think of was the big leaps in Seinfeld.
Is that the one George tried?
Yeah.
With those funny shoes.
Yeah.
Is that the one?
The big...
Yeah, with the big plates underneath.
Didn't Kramer wear them? And that's part of the reason... Was that a different episode where he got invited to the...
Yeah, they thought he was...
He went to the dentist
he was
and wearing the shoes and thought he was...
Yeah, they thought he was handicapped. Yeah. Anyway, very massive tangent we've gone off on there. But the meta speed... And
Trevor likes a tangent.
I'm fascinated with the technology behind this because... The research they've done, and the launch was done through they sent us VR headsets. It was amazing, the VR presentation. Mm. And then at the end of it, they announced these new shoes. And there's a lot of engineering and research that's gone into it about how there's two types of runners. And as you'd know, tell me which type of runner you are.
Not.
there's
two types of runners. Yeah. Runners and not runners.
And not runners, yeah, right. In the running world, if you're an elite runner,
I have run.
You're either I saw you run across the road the other day.
When I said Harry, I'll race you home. Boom, off we go.
Okay,
I'll do that sometimes.
That's good,
mate. Only from like 10 meters from the house.
Okay, well, if you
there's two types of runners. What are they, mate?
Good working, good walking in them. There's a strider, mm-hmm. and there's a runner who's more a cadence runner. So a strider is someone who takes a longer stride, is airborne.
So they're looking for more distance out of each step.
Yeah, each spring.
Whereas a cadence runner is looking for more
runners,
consistent steps.
Not high off the ground, more steps. Right. So, with this technology they've developed, they can offer both the same runner the benefit. So this is a shoe that adapts to the runner. There's two models, and they both kind of have the same technology. One's meant for striders, better than cadence, but this is meant to help them equally.
So, let me describe the shoe as I see it, apart from the fact that it's bright orange.
Yeah.
The base of it, the sole, is very thick, it seems. Yeah. Thicker than normal in my book.
Yep.
But it's especially thick in the middle. And what I mean by that is from, if you imagine, I'm sure there's a proper name for it, but the part of your foot where the toes start, from there all the way back to just before the edge of the heel, right? It's quite thick. And then there's it's a very steep edge that goes up to the toes or the back of the foot. And it strikes me like a four-wheel drive. A four-wheel drive is rated on its approach and departure angle. So when you're driving a four-wheel drive, if there's a 40-degree hill, can your four-wheel drive just drive up it? Or will the bumper run off, right? Because it's quite a sharp...
Yep.
Yeah? So what happens is, I understand, because of that design, it kind of gives you... It actually gives you a push. Like, it's actually a more efficient shoe.
It's more sort of strike and then push off. They call it toe-up, toe-off. So you've got more responsive toe-off. So they've got the FF Blast Turbo Cushioning, which is one of the lightest and bounciest midsole foams that they've got.
Okay.
And that helps generate that compression and then the responsive toe-off. So it gives you that spring.
You know what this strikes me as? It strikes me as the full-length Speedo swimsuits swimmers using at the Olympics, which had to be banned, by the way.
Yeah. But there's also in this a carbon plate that also gives a bit of propulsion. The curved sole design also helps sort of reduce ankle flexion. So it's all about being efficient, but giving him the bounce.
Oh.
That's what I found when I put them on. I felt like the Roadrunner. Remember the Roadrunner, the coyote with the springs on his feet to try to catch the Roadrunner?
100%.
That's what it felt like.
Oh, I obviously am not in the shoe game, and I wear the same pair of shoes. I've got like two or three of them, right?
Yeah.
But my point is, apart from the Under Armour hovers, that's the only shoes I've dealt with in terms of technology because they've got the Bluetooth tracking involved. They've got the cadence tracking and stuff like that. This was the first time I'd seen the use of technology in the design of a shoe that clearly did more about the effect of the shoe on the desired outcome, which is running or marathons, as opposed to just comfort and feel for the wearer. Do you know what I mean?
This isn't about... they look nice, but it's more about the performance. And how it caters to a certain type of runner.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting stat that they gave, and there were some athletes who tested this as well. The initial test showed that, like, over the length of a marathon, which is a long way, the number of steps required to run a marathon actually were reduced by 1.2%.
That's
think of the number of steps you take. That's solid. The less steps you're taking.
That's an efficiency gain for the athlete.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Well, you're doing 1.2% less steps in a competitive race like a marathon.
Push yourself 1.2% harder.
So that could be the difference there. But they also had in the testing.
That's what I mean about the whole, you know, what's going to happen in Tokyo?
Yeah, well,
2021.
Well, this coincides with them being the apparel. They've given them the uniforms.
But what I'm saying
shoes.
Is, does someone wearing this actually have an advantage? And is that correct?
Well, good luck. the good luck. ASICS is an Australian company. They're international.
No, but I'm saying,
you know, yeah,
is that the way it should be?
Well, I think if there is, I don't know. I'm sure the Olympics isn't like Formula One where everyone's got to have the same kind of parameters for their cars. Yeah,
but in the same way, the Mercedes have a much better car than has to, just amazingly better. Yeah. But they've got the same rules.
Right.
But Mercedes pushed the boundaries. So I would assume ASICS have pushed the boundaries within the rules of the shoe.
They have to.
See, this is the thing. There's nothing in the shoe that's propelling them along. It's just the
material.
And the design of the foam and the way it's packaged that makes it a better shoe.
Well, there were two athletes who were testing this. There was Lisa Waitman. She's a long-distance runner. She said that since trialing the ASICS shoes, she's achieved the fastest 10K time by an Australian woman on Australian soil. So she's loving it. The other guy who tested it was a Olympic hopeful. He's a triathlete, Jack Burstwhistle. That's his name.
Yep.
This is the best long distance race shoe I've worn. It has the perfect blend of comfort and speed to keep me running faster for longer.
But they are also the thinnest.
Yeah, they're
airiest,
so light. They're light.
Lightest.
Yeah, they're like a featherweight.
Like,
yeah.
What the hell?
It's amazing. Yeah. This isn't the sort of kicks that Seinfeld would wear on his jeans.
What are they worth?
$330.
Oh!
Yeah. $330.
What about Amanda? I just had them sitting at home. And she goes, where did you buy those? And I said, I'm going to stop you right there. Why would I buy, A, a pair of shoes, B, a bright orange pair of shoes, babe?
I wore them the other day.
Think about it.
I went on my big walk with
them. I don't know what I wear those with.
It was spongy. It was great.
What am I going to wear? What could I wear? I'm wearing dark coloured clothes.
On jeans, I look all right.
On jeans?
Yeah, I often wear my runners on jeans. I'm going to wear them on my jeans. I've already worn them out in public. Awesome. You know, the key with them? Key, right?
Mm-hmm.
Black socks. Don't wear white socks.
Okay.
So black socks sort of blends into it there. See how they're black around the what do you call the hole where your foot goes in? That part? Where your foot goes in, the hole, that's black, and then it blends down into this bright witch's hat orange. Would that be accurate? Witch's hat, the sort of that bright orange of a witch's hat? Is that what this is?
That is, mate,
It's brighter than a witch's hat.
Yeah.
But that's the trend now. Like, there's a lot of Nikes you can buy that are like that as well. But these, I'm impressed. And that photo of my cover photo, have you written this for EFTM yet?
No, not yet, no.
So that picture there, that was taken at the top of my driveway.
Well done.
I just did that, and this is the one. That was the top of my driveway on the road.
I'll admit they're a good-looking shoe.
Yeah, I like them. And they're really bright orange, and people are going to immediately notice them.
And I'll be like,
just training for Tokyo 2020. Got Tokyo.
And they'll be like, you've missed out. I'm like, it's happening in 2021. Don't get me started. You know, what are you training for? Tokyo 2020. Everyone's going to go, mate, that was last year.
Yeah.
It's a stupid thing to
call it. But also, I mentioned too, it coincides with them. That just yesterday, they announced that they've provided the uniforms for the athletes.
I'm so excited.
With specials like science. Like the science has gone into the clothing, so the traps less sweat, and it's all really high-tech clothing as well.
I'm going to have to get some of that too, yeah. Especially if it's skin tight, because you know I love showing off the curves of my body.
Exactly, yeah.
Have they got a man boob version?
So you're still not wearing a t-shirt yet, mate? All the weight you've lost, you're not.
No.
Do you need to get surgery or anything, mate?
That's the only chance. The only chance I'm going to wear a t-shirt.
What?
Is if I there's two chances. One, if I lose another 20 kilos, and even then I'll have big saggy skin sacks, and or some sort of surgery.
Oh my god,
it's not happening.
Really? Okay.
Definitely not.
I'm a t-shirt man. I love t-shirts.
Oh, well, you're very proud of your very muscular body. Good
I love
on you.
The t-shirts.
Well done. Goodbye.
This is Two Blokes Talking Tech.
Two Blokes Talking Tech, proudly sponsored by our good mates at Arlo. And you know what? Now's the right time to be thinking about your Arlo cameras because it's the Easter holiday break. And if you're going away for Easter and you're looking for a quick and easy way to get a home security system installed without having
Let me guess, Essential.
Arlo Essential Spotlight Camera, correct. Yeah, simply connects directly to your existing home Wi-Fi. And the advantage is installation's easy, direct to Wi-Fi solution, so there's no need to have a connected to a base station. You can out of the box connect it to Wi-Fi and that you'll be able to monitor your home. Really a less complicated setup, saves you time. You can spend your energy on preparing for your holidays. I've had the Essential cameras in my place for a while. Whenever I'm traveling when I used to travel, I always like to check in through the, like I was up on the Gold Coast recently, I was checking in on the cameras to check on the dogs and to see what parcels were on my front doorstep as well.
Just, you want to check the one at the front door there, because about 5 minutes before you got home, I just left a message for you.
Did you? What, on the camera?
Well, there was
on
a parcel, doorbell? By the way, there was a parcel delivered too.
Oh, was it? Just
it's in the parcel, man.
In the
well, just as I pulled up, there was a
parcel. Oh, so in my little box.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, great.
And
thanks,
then,
mate.
So you'll get the parcel man walking out, then me walking in and just waving with one finger.
I'll check that out, you idiot.
Waving with one finger at the camera.
Oh. Yeah, so like I've recommended these to so many people, and I recommended it to a friend, and they said it was really easy to install. 5 minutes, they were unpacked and connected to Wi-Fi, and watching the camera feed on their mobile, they thought it was like a magic trick. It was awesome.
Yeah, and I think the number one thing I always say about the Essentials is you buy the Arlo Essential, it's your get-started camera, and it doesn't prevent you from adding multiple cameras, multiple essentials, or going to a base station style. So if you own an Essential and then down the track you decide, I'm going to get a two camera pro kit with the base station, the Essential plugs into that base station.
It still works the same ecosystem. Yeah, yeah. Awesome. If you want to find out more, visit arlo.com to read more about Essential Spotlight Camera and how the Arlo cameras can help protect your property.
This is Two Blokes Talking Tech with Trevor Long and Stephen Fennec.
So, scam calls. We've talked about these a fair bit, actually, over the years. In fact, Telstra gave us some information.
Telstra, yeah, but that was
recently.
Just about Telstra, wasn't it?
But I found this staggering. The Australian Communications and Media Authority, ACMA, released some data this week that said that they had they were aware of 55 million calls being blocked since December, when the new regulations, the new code around scam calls and such had been put in place. 11 million of those were the scams, they call them Wingari, where you get a quick phone call, it's missed number, you call it back and that's a premium number. The others were spoofed numbers where, you know, people just being scammed. But, mate, I did the numbers, you know, broadly, 3 months. 55 million calls. That's 600,000 calls a day that are now being blocked.
Yeah.
Like, and there's still calls coming through.
Yeah.
But 600,000 a day being blocked. It's a massive credit to the telcos for getting together and doing it right.
Yeah.
It's also a slight on the telcos for not doing it themselves first. They needed to be kind of pushed, but that's okay.
Yeah.
We'll move on from that. It's a good story in the end. And, mate, the number just blows my mind.
Can you just imagine, though, like scam calls, like spam, it's a numbers game.
Yeah.
The more you do, the better chance for success. And even if they get like a 0.5%
return, hit rate,
it's massive. So that's the reason why it's just so prevalent. And now with robocalls and all these other things going on, the number of people who, you know, they are a very small number of people, but it's still lucrative. That's why they keep doing it.
And
unfortunately, I often get asked the question, how do I stop getting spam? How do I stop getting scam calls? The answer is don't have a phone number and don't have an email address. It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
That's how it's what's going. Because you know what? The scam calls, especially to your mobile, they don't think they've got a phone book saying, oh, let's ring Trevor Long today.
No.
It's randomly generated numbers. You type in a random, what is it, 04, whatever, nine-digit code, whatever it is, nine digits, ten digits, you're going to get someone answering the phone.
Yeah.
If you dive in 0412,
Hamish
whatever.
Hamish and Andy used to have a skit on their radio show where they would call a random number and they would try and, you know, get to know the person, pretend they knew the person, all this kind of stuff. That the random, you can call random numbers.
You can.
I mean, when I was a kid, you'd ring a number and go, "G'day, is your fridge running?
You better go get it.
You better go and get it." It's Mr. Wall there.
It's
Mrs. Wall there. Well, what's holding up the roof?
Yeah. God, that were the days, eh?
Hey?
Did you used to do that, mate? Prank calls?
Absolutely. Yeah. In our community Facebook group, one of the local businesses got in and goes, "Oh, we're getting all these prank calls." And, like, it's a drama because it's a lot of calls now. But they were, you know, appealing.
Calls, not scam calls, prank calls.
Prank calls, literally local kids calling and pranking them. And it's like, so my thing is, that's crap. You shouldn't be calling one business and targeting them. But I don't have a problem with a prank call.
Yeah, it's funny.
As long as
you're not,
there's a difference, let me be very clear. There's a difference between a prank call and a nuisance call. A nuisance call is dragging you along and taking you down the chain. A prank call is a funny gag that's initiated and executed
seconds,
quickly. Yes.
Yeah.
It should leave you hanging up going, "You bloody little one." Or,
"You're smart,
that's your
smart
little one. Oh, you dear, I got you. That's a good one."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But you've got to remember that this code came in at the end of 2020, over $48 million was scammed in phone scams alone.
Yeah, just phones. That's not text and online and
sorry, 48 million were scam calls. And scam calls make up 48% of all scams.
Amazing. But the everyone gets them. Like you get them on your home phone, on your mobile phone now. And yep. You know the other thing too they do? They do the they ring you from an overseas number.
Yes.
And hang up.
And what that is,
and that's sort of just thinking, oh, what could this be? Yeah. And people ring back the number.
If you ring back, that's a premium number and it costs you money.
Yeah, but also justifies that your number's real as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, people who answer their phone, and you know what? The unfortunate thing is these bludgers, they have these spoofing, they can spoof a number.
I get a lot of Melbourne number calls, like, yeah. And it's just nothing. But and then that, you go, but now you they've go, got
hello,
your number.
Yeah, and they think, okay, that number's real, they'll tick that box. So yeah. they even if you're not scammed, they've still got your bloody number, haven't they?
So I want to give credit to, and it may take me too long to find this. I saw it in the Man Cave the other day. I'll be honest, I learn a lot from my audience who kind of have their own conversations in the Facebook group, the Man Cave. And, well, maybe it was on the page. Hang on, let me look. So we put up this story about the scam calls. And I had a lady comment saying that she just doesn't get scam calls anymore. I'm like, oh, wow. How's that? Well, get this. And
she's,
I have heard of this product.
She's disconnected a phone?
No, I've heard of this product but never looked into it properly.
Yeah.
And I found the thread now, so just bear with me. Now, here we are. I've got it. I swear it's close.
Facebook. Trev checking his Facebook page is riveting podcast
it's
material.
It's great podcast material. But great. I'm telling you, I can't find the bloody thing. The thing was, this woman said that she doesn't get bugger all or any because she had installed a Telstra Guardian phone.
Okay.
Now, I've heard of it, but I've never tested it. Here it is, Vera. Good on you, Vera. We've stopped all scam calls to our house since we installed the Telstra Guardian phone. It's brilliant. I got it on Telstra Plus points and are so happy that we can eat our dinner in peace. Only the people you add to a VIP list can call through directly. Otherwise, every call is screened and the caller must announce their name. You're then given the option to allow the call through or just disconnect it. Scammers never announce their name, so the phone stays nice and quiet. If it rings, you know it's a genuine call.
Very nice. That's been around for a while, I think, the Guardian.
But, I mean, I think the problem is it's a landline phone, right? So not enough people have a landline phone
now. Right. Yeah, well.
But maybe. Yeah. So let's think of it this way.
If they could do that for mobile.
Would you accept that as a feature on your mobile?
Yep. So if a scam caller is trying to ring you and they're not prepared to announce their name, then you don't get the call.
So here's how my problem is, I'd probably do well at it because I save a lot of numbers. Like I save every number.
Yep.
And I'll give you a tip, and this is not just for you, but this is for anyone listening. What I do is maybe on a Friday night, but try and do it once a week, I scroll through all of my calls, my call log, and I go, can I identify that number? Do I remember who that was? Or I look it up in my email. And if I can identify it, I save it.
Yeah.
I try and save every call I get from someone I know, I save it.
But your phone also, when your iPhone, you're getting a call from a blank number. If that number appears in an email, it says maybe it's that person, correct. Which is really good.
So let me ask this. Maybe it's actually an iOS thing or an Android thing. Maybe it's not a telco thing because here's my problem with it being a telco thing.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this. Maybe if I'm a Telstra customer, Telstra have this technology in the Guardian phone, right? Call comes through. Telstra doesn't have my contacts. I've got 11,000, 12,000 contacts in my address book, right? If I've got to share those with Telstra, I think that's a roadblock. I'm probably not going to want to put them in the cloud or something, right?
Yeah.
So they don't know whether I've got the contact, right? So at the network level, it's harder. But at the phone level, if what I want the option of doing is saying, obviously I can block calls now, good.
Yeah.
I want to accept any call from anyone who's in my contact list, not just marked as a favorite, because you can do that. You can say, you know, do not disturb except for favorites and stuff.
Yep.
But every other call, what I want is a system that allows them to, as you say, announce themselves and then it comes through.
It's like going to, if you sort of going to see someone in where there's a doorman in the building, you're going to say, okay, well, no one goes up unless you're announced. You know, when George tries to go see what's the boss of the network?
Yeah.
He goes, no, all visitors are announced.
Maybe it's getting harder because it's a voice thing. Maybe it is because it's a tick box in an iPhone. So every iPhone has a box that says, are you prepared to be part of the anti-spam database? Yeah. You know, so you tick a box. And what it allows Apple to do is show your name.
What's to stop a scammer? Say they see, I don't know, it takes a bit of research, I guess, to do this, but what's to stop? Say I'm a scammer and I'm trying to scam you and I know you're mates with Stephen Fenwick. What's to stop a scammer saying, my name's Stephen Fenwick?
No, but I'm saying, so it's in iMessage, right? It's a FaceTime registration thing. You tick a box.
Right.
The phone number's only registered to one person or one account.
Yeah, true.
They've got to have and if they get marked as a scammer,
that would be better,
they lose their Apple ID account.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep. Oh, mate, there's got to be... I'm surprised there hasn't been some kind of technology to wipe this out.
I'm suggesting this as an iOS feature now because you think about it. I'm trying to think about calls. So here's a random call I got this morning. I'm just going to hit message.
And was that off your app you were using today, mate?
This is the bloke I was... What are you talking about? Oh, shut up. Yeah. This is the bloke I was meeting this morning, but okay. I haven't saved his number yet.
Yep.
Because we've been emailing. I haven't actually got his number yet.
Right. So you were chatting online first before you met up in person? Is that right? Or... Now you know what I'm talking about, you idiot. Okay.
Anyway, so my point
is, it's all innocent.
Because
it's
a blue message, I know he's got iMessage, right?
Yes.
So he's got iPhone, he's got iMessage,
yes,
and he's got an Apple ID.
Yep.
So why can't he tick a box that says, I'm willing to share my name with all people I call?
Yep.
And so it's just always going to show the name.
Because
then I can say... Everything that is not identified goes to voicemail.
Yeah, but the other problem is that a lot of the phones are coming from landlines, though. The scam caller is not coming from a mobile. It's from a landline.
Yeah, so block all those.
Yeah, it's a landline.
Block them all.
How, though? So someone rings you from their home phone.
This is my point. If I'm that annoyed or I want to really rationalise my phone usage, I'm happy for Apple to say, we're gonna send everything to voicemail that isn't in your contacts or an Apple ID identified caller.
Yeah. I could live with that.
So if my dentist rings, who I haven't saved their number, they're just going to go to voicemail.
Yeah.
Fine, I don't care. Whatever.
Okay.
Leave a voicemail.
That's fair. Drop that in the suggestion box at WWDC this year.
I'm excited about this.
I reckon...
I think it could work. It's not a third-party application because it's too hard to integrate fully into the phone.
So you reckon it's device level, not network level?
Yes. It's got it.
But there has to be some network level involved with there, mate.
No, not at all. Network doesn't need to know about it. Because the network doesn't know who I know.
They're routing the calls, though.
But the network doesn't know who I know, so they don't know who I want to see calls from.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's less an anti-scam thing, more just a filtering of your phone thing.
Yeah, true.
But it does help with anti-scam.
Yeah, well, that's half the problem, is that they imitate numbers that look like mobile numbers, Australian mobile numbers, and you've got a tendency to answer that call. I know some people have a policy, look, if they're not in my contacts, I'm not answering the call.
Mm.
They just let it go to voicemail. But I answer calls that aren't in my contacts. Who knows who that could be? But it's fair to say, too, that we probably, 90% of calls made are on mobile phones nowadays? Would that be fair?
Yeah.
Around that?
And we know that
high number?
40, 50% of them are on iPhones.
Yeah.
So, it would be better if Google and Apple worked together, like they did on the contact tracing, on an anti-spam thing, that worked together on a device-level, authentication of callers.
I think I'm so surprised there isn't something done already to sort this out. That could be iOS 15. Could be something.
Let me put it to you this way. Every phone number has a name. Phone has a name, whether it's a company or a person.
It's associated with a person or a company.
Every phone number has. So what I'm saying here is I don't want to publish. I don't want it to be that people can reverse lookup. They can't just go, Trevor Long, I want to phone them.
Yeah.
But because the devices can have a known database, if people register, then why can't we stop seeing numbers? Why are we still seeing numbers? When someone rings, it should just say their name. Now, I've had this. There's an app called Sync Me I've used. It's a very good app, but I've no doubt privacy-wise it's an absolute outrage because I want to upload all my contacts, my LinkedIn, everything. It searches everything.
Yeah.
And so because tens of thousands of people have the app and use the app, it's very good at looking up phone numbers. So here's how it works. I don't have it installed right now, but you copy a phone number, and if you've copied a phone number into your clipboard, you go across to the widgets, and there's a Sync Me widget. It'll show you whose number it is.
Okay.
If it knows that, if that person is known to it, because they've got the app, but because they've been involved in a network of people who know them, I'll know broadly who it is.
Okay.
So it's possible. I think it could be done better.
Nowhere to hide from Trevor Long.
I think it could be done better.
I agree, mate. That's what I'm saying. And I'm surprised that these big companies haven't taken that on board as being the standout.
You heard it here first, iOS 16. Probably won't be this year. Two Blokes Talking Tech.
Well, just to finish off very quickly, the Boost Mobile are at it again.
It's a value-added show, isn't it? Sorry, I've just looked at the clock.
Yes. Refurbished products from Boost Mobile.
Yep.
More Apple products have been announced, available through Coles right now. They've already had iPhones in the past. Now, the latest is an iPhone 7 for under $200, but they've also expanded to an Apple Watch. So Apple Watch Series 3 and 4.
So the Apple Watch
isn't
going to be Coles. It's going to be on the Boost website, right?
Is that right? I thought it was all through Coles.
No, I'm pretty sure this is all for the Boost Mobile website, refurbished.boost.com.
Yeah, there is refurb. That's right. I've had that link on my site. But the point is that refurbed goes beyond iPhone. It's Apple Watch now and many iPads as well. And we're talking from $249 for iPads and Apple Watches, which is, you know, if you don't want to buy a brand new Apple Watch, you don't want to buy a brand new iPad, maybe you want to buy one for your child.
$239.
Yeah.
Well, that's crazy good.
That's the older iPad Air, though, but still.
Doesn't matter.
It's
still
got Retina display.
Do you know what this is? This is the perfect device for people still running an iPad 2. Lots of people still having that. They're starting to get a problem because the iOS aren't updating, apps aren't updating. Yep. But they can't afford a $400 iPad. There's a $239 iPad.
Someone commented, said, is it worth buying a refurbished iPhone? Also, well, through Boost, you're getting 30-day money-back satisfaction guarantee.
12-month warranty.
12-month warranty. It's been through a 72-point check. So you're getting something that's going to work and that you're protected with a warranty.
Mm.
So I think if you want an iPhone, you can't afford the brand new 12 or an 11, then I think this is an ideal choice through Boost Mobile. And we did have a lovely message on Twitter from one of our readers saying that I'm glad that you told us about Boost because they've now they've sorted out their family's data problems and the guys are very happy with the service.
I switched to Boost yesterday.
Right.
So look, Boost, refurbished.boost.com.au, and there's a whole range of options there. But so full disclosure, I switched to Optus last week, I think, because I wanted to check out their network and the 5G and stuff. Their 5G is good. I found a few spots with it just randomly. I wasn't seeking it out, but I just came across it randomly.
Did you have 5G at home with Optus?
Speeds look good and everything.
Good.
But there's no way it's as in many places. Now, I'm not the everywhere man, but in my driving and my testing, I was seeing Telstra way more than I was seeing Optus. But most importantly, I had too many dropouts over the last week.
On Optus?
Yeah.
5G?
So for, no, no, just 4G, on Optus.
Optus.
I'm seeing 3G a lot. I was seeing 3G a lot. And at home, it was just not. So I was with Vodafone for years. I was with Telstra for 6 or 8 months. I was with Optus for a week. I had to ditch it. Now, that's not a slant on the Optus network. It's just my home. If it's not at your home, mate, I had a
similar issue here.
Dropped out on 6PR twice. So I'm like, that's it. I'm out. I had to go. So I switched the next day.
So I was an Optus customer too, and I was in where we are now was an Optus black spot. Like, I remember years ago ringing Optus because I was working for News Limited at the time, and their corporate account was with Optus, right? Yeah. So my work number was an Optus number.
Yeah.
And I remember ringing up Optus and they said, Mr. Fennec, you appear to live in a black spot. I said, no, tell me something I don't know, mate. That's why I'm ringing you. Problem was that I was sort of equidistant from two towers and it was bouncing, couldn't decide which tower. I think it's improved recently with 4G and now 5G, but I've been with Telstra now since last year and I haven't had a problem.
Mate, so porting to Optus was a bit of a nightmare, but that was partly...
So you did the eSIM.
Yeah, that was partly because I already had an Optus account registered.
Yeah, it was your fault.
but it was a nightmare to fix. But anyway, I did persevere and got it done.
Okay.
Let me tell you,
yesterday... So you only lasted a... So you've ditched the... just a month-to-month thing you had.
Well, I signed a postpaid ready to go, a month to month. I'm not signing contracts with anyone. I would never recommend a contract to anyone ever.
Well, no one does that anymore, do they?
No. Well, they do, though. They're signing contracts because they want devices, but that's a whole other deal.
Okay.
But, mate, I put the Boost SIM in, got the text message, all that stuff. 10 minutes later, it was fully operational. It took 6 minutes for my number to work. It was brilliant. Such a quick switch.
But 4G only, but 4G, no 5G yet.
No.
What did you say? You don't need 5G?
I don't need 5G.
Now, how many times have you lauded that over me that you've got 5G in your house?
Just because it's a great thing to lord
over
you.
And now that you think, I don't need 5G.
What the hell do I need 5G? Mate, I did a speed test at home. I was getting 190 with Boost on 4G.
Yeah, wow.
190. What do I need more than 190 for?
And so this is
for?
Prepaid. So you got a prepaid SIM.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, how much data you got?
It's an introductory plan of 3 gig.
3 gig. You waste that in 20 minutes.
It's only 7 days, so yeah.
It's a 7-day SIM, that's it. 7 days.
Yeah, because it's when you get a SIM. So if you buy one of these refurbished phones and stuff, they come with a SIM that gives you like 7 days or
and
more.
And I think the iPad comes with an even bigger, with more data on it. Yeah.
So on 4G here with Boost, you know, 60.
Does it say Boost or Telstra?
No, it says Telstra. Let me tell you this. This is what I've learnt.
Yeah.
It's Telstra, mate. I logged in with my Telstra ID.
Yeah, that's good.
The Boost app, I logged in with my Telstra
Boost,
ID.
Boost are pretty solid there with Telstra, haven't they, with that? And who else is on Telstra? Aldi? Are they Aldi?
Yeah, but, mate, as Peter Adderton will say, because I've seen him on Twitter respond to a few people I've mentioned it to, because last night was going, I'm switching to Belong, and he goes, Belong. And he's like, it's the same. It's Boost is on Telstra. He goes, Telstra, we've got the whole network. Boost, I don't know what that means.
Belong has says that, or Boost says that.
Boost says
they've got the whole network.
They're a bigger deal than even than Belong. Belong. Yeah, right. I don't know.
Belong's owned by Telstra, isn't it?
I think so.
Belong's owned by Telstra, yeah.
Oh, mate, there's a lot to unpack there, but anyway.
But the other story, I think, coming up for them is that Boost will eventually have an eSIM as well.
Yeah.
And Belong also. I understand that was testing.
And there's no doubt that Boost and Belong will get 5G before Aldi and Woolworths and others as well, too.
Of course, yeah, of course.
Because that's the way it works.
Yes.
All right, value added there, show for you today. Solid. We'll be back next week during the school holidays. Stephen, you know it's school holidays. You don't have any kids at school.
Oh, I do actually. Well, my wife's a teacher, mate. Oh, so that's true. I do know when school holidays are on. So she'll be at home a lot more often in the next couple of weeks.
You're going to be home all weekend too, aren't you?
Exactly right.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Two Blokes Talking Tech.